The following is a seminar entitled Spiritual Perfection in Household Life, Session 2, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 21st, 2014, in Hare Krishna Valley, Australia.
We're up to text 5 from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 14. Yavadattam pasino dehegehe chapandita virakto raktavatatra niloke nadatam yaset. While working to earn his livelihood, so much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, one who is actually learned should live in human society unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. Purport. This is the picture of ideal family life. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Rai about the goal of his life, Ramananda Rai described it in different ways according to the recommendations of the revealed scriptures. And finally, Sri Ramananda Rai explained that one may stay in his own position, whether as a Brahmana, a Shudra, a Sannyasi, or whatever. But one must try to inquire about life's goal, atato brahma-jigyasa. This is the proper utilization of the human form of life. When one misuses the gift of the human form by unnecessarily indulging in the animal propensities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and does not try to get out of the clutches of Maya, which subjects one to repeated birth, death, old age, and disease, one is again punished by being forced to descend to the lower species and undergo evolution according to the laws of nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah. Being completely under the grip of material nature, the living entity could must evolve again from the lower species to the higher species until at last he returns to human life and gets the chance to be freed from the material clutches. A wise man, however, learns from the Shastras and Guru that we living entities are all eternal, but we are put into troublesome conditions because of associating with different modes under the laws of material nature. He therefore concludes that in the human form of life, one should not endeavor for unnecessary necessities, but should live a very simple life, just maintaining body and soul together. Certainly one requires some means of livelihood. And according to one's varna and ashram, this means of livelihood is prescribed in the Shastras. One should be satisfied with this. Therefore, instead of hankering for more and more money, a sincere devotee of the Lord tries to invent some ways to earn his livelihood, and when he does so, Krishna helps him. Earning one's livelihood, therefore, is not a problem. The real problem is how to get free from the bondage of birth, death, old age, and disease. Attaining this freedom and not inventing unnecessary necessities is the basic principle of Vedic civilization. One should be satisfied with whatever means of life comes automatically. The modern materialistic civilization is just the opposite of the ideal civilization. Every day the so-called leaders of modern society invent something contributing to a cumbersome way of life that implicates people more and more in the cycle of birth, death, old age, and disease. So that's pretty clear, instructions from Prabhupada. Earning your living is a secondary consideration. It's not the primary business of your life, how to earn my living, my profession, my career, etc. Your real profession is to go back to Godhead. Take whatever means of livelihood, says Prabhupada says, look at that again. He says, Therefore, instead of hankering for more and more money, a sincere devotee of the Lord tries to invent some ways to earn his livelihood. When he does so, Krishna helps him. So whatever way you can, whatever comes the easiest, whatever works for you the easiest way, so it, you get it done. That's the point. Find some way that you can earn a livelihood that works well for you. So you can focus on your real business of Krishna consciousness. Actually, the modern day society has made this very, very difficult. The animals have no problem. It's like that we saw the kangaroos yesterday. They're not worried about their career, you see. They just, whatever, when they want to eat, they eat. They want to sleep, they sleep. They want to mate, they mate. They defend themselves, they have to, they do that. So they hop away or whatever they do to defend themselves. So for the animals, and the thing is, the human being has greater intelligence. The human being is more intelligent than the animals. So actually for us, we should be less stressed than the animals about our livelihood. We're more stressed. You see, we've created a civilization where we're so much in anxiety. I gotta get a job, and I gotta be okay. I have to please the boss, and I gotta, you know, it's just so much anxiety. So many hours of the day, such insane commutes people are doing. Some people commute 3 hours to work and 3 hours home, 6 hours just in the commute. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. We've created a civilization where it's so hard just to even survive. So much stress we have to go through. It should be easier for a human being, less stressful than an animal, but we made it more stressful. But the good news is, Krishna helps you. Krishna helps that person who sincerely wants to get out of this material world. Krishna helps him to, as it says here, Krishna helps him to invent some way to earn his livelihood. Krishna helps you. So if you're really sincere to go back to God, then Krishna helps you. I know in my life I had the sincere desire to go back to Godhead. And Krishna really facilitated me. I spent 3 years in the corporate world, that was it. 3 years only. And I got out. I worked part-time for a while, and then I started a little enterprise, Travelrama, selling airline tickets before the internet became in big time. I had a nice little business for a while, and then I retired from that just to travel and preach. But I only spent 3 years. I was a singer-songwriter, and then I was a brahmachari for 14 years. And I spent 3 years as a four-time computer programmer, about 3 years. And then part-time, four hours a day only, part-time telesales specialist, 4 hours a day only. And then we was working out of our own house, selling airline tickets, and then full-time preaching. I could see how Krishna arranged that. My material necessities have not been a problem. I've never had a problem, even though and I never sent my wife to work either. I never wanted to send my wife to work. I figured that how could I send my wife to work for some sudra, report to some sudra? I didn't want to lower her to have to work at like a sudra for some karmi. I couldn't even think of doing such a thing. And sometimes we weren't making very much money. At one point, actually in between the corporate job and the part-time job, we were vanaprasthas, just living in a van. Vanaprasthas. um I mean, we went to some austere times. We were in San Diego, and we didn't have an apartment even, but I rented a garage, and I lived in the garage. And I went to the temple to take my shower. I just lived in a garage. We went through some austere times, but we were always happy. Just living, we didn't have any apartment. We rented a garage, a two-car garage. And I put all our belongings on one side of it and the car on the other, and I lived in that garage. And we got a phone installed in the garage with an answering machine. Maharaji stayed with one of the Maharajis there in San Diego, and I lived in the garage and went to the temple to take my shower in the morning. So you know, we've been through. Well, we always been very. We were happy because we were preaching full time. We were putting Bhagavad Gita's in libraries. We would go. We would get donors. It was $108, I think, for forget how many Gita's. We give donations, then we put the Bhagavad Gita's in the libraries. And I remember we went to one library in San Diego and said, we were wondering when you would come. Because they had a meeting of all the librarians in San Diego, and the meeting said all these Hare Krishnas are coming around with Bhagavad Gita to donate to the library. So they would say, oh, we were wondering when you would come. It's always been a great adventure for us to put Krishna in the center, and just somehow or other livelihood always came, you know. Just put Krishna in the center and the livelihood was always there. So the same principle applies to anyone who's serious about Krishna consciousness. Krishna will make sure that you have some means of livelihood. If you're sincere about being his devotee and going back to Godhead, he'll facilitate you. He's facilitating the atheists. So there's no reason to be in anxiety about it. Sometimes I get letters from people that are just totally stressed out, emails, you know. Oh, I don't have a job, and I'm wondering. I'm just total in anxiety. He said, just focus on being Krishna conscious and everything will work out. Don't worry about it. Doesn't mean you don't go out and look for a job. You just sit around and wait for your paycheck to sit there. No, you have to make the endeavor. But you just peacefully chant Hare Krishna, take shelter of the Lord, now I'm fully surrendered to you, and your means of livelihood will come. Text number 6. Gyataya pitaro putra brattara suhrido pare yad vadanti yadat shanti channumudaita nirmama. An intelligent man in human society should make his own programs of activities very simple. If there are suggestions from his friends, children, parents, brothers, or anyone else, he should externally agree, saying, yes, that's all right. But internally, he should be determined not to create a cumbersome life in which the purpose of life will not be fulfilled. So, this is a nice direction. You don't agitate people's minds. You keep a nice, pleasant relationship so that, yes, 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 yes. This reminds me of Giriraj Maharaj, one of our great sannyasis of ISKCON. One time I went preaching with him in Mumbai. One evening I went out to a wedding. Now he was making appointments for life membership interviews, you know, to make life members. He was setting appointments. So, you know, and everyone knew him. He was very well known. He was the leader of our Bombay temple at that time. So, they kept saying, Maharaj, come and take prasad. He'd say, yes, 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 just now coming. And he'd make another appointment, and they'd say, Maharaj, come take prasad. Yes, 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 just now coming. And he'd make another appointment. And the whole evening, I watched him do this. It was amazing. He'd say, yes, 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 just ek minute. He'd make another appointment. He spent the whole night, everybody had gone home, the hall was empty. And he still hadn't taken the prasadam. But he kept saying, yes, yes, yes. And he went on signing up. He booked all these appointments for life membership interviews. So that was a good example of this, you see. He didn't say, no, no, I'm not going. He would say, yes, yes, Ekman. In this way, very tactfully, you see. They wanted him, I don't even think it was prasadam, really. It was just some, you know, vegetarian feast that he kept saying, yes, 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 yes. So in the same way, one can be very diplomatic, to pass, not to create agitation. But you go about your business, you see. You go about your business to practice Krishna consciousness. And even the non-devotees, you're very mellow, friendly, yes, 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 yes. It's a nice guideline here from the Bhagavatam. Text number 7, Divyam Bhaman Chaturaksham Vittam Machutta Nirmatam Tatsarvam Upayunjana Etat Kriyat Svato Buddha. The natural products created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be utilized to maintain the bodies and souls of all living entities. The necessities of life are of three types: those produced from the sky, from rainfall, from the earth, from the mines, the seas, or the fields, and from the atmosphere, that which is obtained suddenly and unexpectedly. Text number 8. Yavadriyeta jattarang tavat svatvang hidehinam Adikam yo bimanyeta stateno nandamarhati. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together, but one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. By God's favor, we sometimes get large quantities of food grains or suddenly receive some contribution or unexpected profit in business. In this way, we may get more money than needed. So how should that be spent? Just like recently, our Devamita Swami, somebody said, I like Maharaj, I want to donate $1 million. So he, instead of thinking, yeah, I have so many projects, I could, but he thought, no, Mayapur. Temple of Vedic in the planetarium in Mayapur. Maharaj just said, he had a little money, the whole $1 million given to Mayapur. So somebody had $1 million they didn't need, you see. Some wealthy businessman had done very well in his business. He had $1 million. Instead of using it for his sense gratification, he said, let me give this to Krishna. You see the move? So if you have some extra money, you see, give it to the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Give it to support the preachers of the Krishna Consciousness Movement or a Krishna Conscious Project. You'll benefit greatly. You know what happened? You know what will happen when you do that? Well, everybody's on the altar now. All attention's on the altar. When you give, when Krishna sees you're giving whatever extra funds you have in his service, he'll give you even more. This is a secret. If you give to Krishna whatever you have that, you know, beyond what you need, he'll give you more and more and more and more and more. He wants to see how you're utilizing what he gives you, whether you're using it for sense gratification or using it for his service. If you show him that you're using whatever I don't really need for myself, I'm giving it in your service, he'll give more and more and more and more and more. I advise those who are taking a nap right now to wake up. You can take a nap later on. I don't know if we want to wake them up or not. Maybe they didn't get much sleep last night. They're not used to Mangalarti or something. Okay. Text number 9. Magroshcha kara markaku sarishp kaga Makshika Atmana Putravat Pashyet Tire Esham Antaram Kiyat. One should treat animals such as deer, camels, asses, monkeys, mice, snakes, birds, and flies exactly like one's own son. how little difference there actually is between children and these innocent animals. That means you shouldn't kill cows, obviously. We have to respect all of the creatures. They're all our family members, actually.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So does that mean so we can keep some pets and treat them only?
Do we do what? Compassionate only to the animals?
Yeah.
No. Compassionate to all living creatures. That's the point. Trivigan nati krishchena bhajeta grihamed yapi yata devshang yata kalam yavadaivo papaditam. Even if one is a householder rather than a brahmachari, a sannyasi or vanaprastha, one should not endeavor very hard for religiosity, economic development, or satisfaction of his senses. Even in householder life, one should be satisfied to maintain body and soul together, whatever is available, with a minimum endeavor, according to place and time, with the grace of the Lord. One should not engage oneself in ugra karma. So the whole point is plain living and high thinking. You do what is necessary, but don't go beyond them, because the material necessities are not as important as the spiritual necessities to hear and chant about the Lord. Let's see, there's many verses here. Krimi vidbashma nishtantam kevad tuchcham kalevaram kva tadiye ritir bharya kayang atma nabashchadi. Through proper deliberation, one should give up attraction to his wife's body, because that body will ultimately be transformed into small insects, stool, or ashes. What is the value of this insignificant body? How much greater is the Supreme Being who is all-pervading like the sky? Purport. Here also the same point is stressed. One should give up attachment for his wife, or in other words, for sex life. If one is intelligent, he can think of his wife's body as nothing but a lump of matter that will ultimately be transformed into small insects, stool, or ashes. In different societies, there are different ways of dealing with the human body at the time of the funeral ceremony. In some societies, the body is given to the vulture. This is what the Parsis do, to be eaten. And therefore, the body ultimately turns to vulture stool. Sometimes the body is merely abandoned. In that case, the body is consumed by small insects. In some societies, the body is immediately burned after death, and thus it becomes ashes. In any case, if one intelligently considers the constitution of the body and the soul beyond it, what is the value of the body? Antavat imang deha nityashyokta saririnaha. The body may perish at any moment, but the soul is eternal. If one gives up attachment for the body and increases attachment for the spirit soul, his life is successful. It is merely a matter of deliberation. So, Haribo, focus here. Very important point. We have to see, husband and wife should see each other not as the material bodies, but as the spiritual being within. Very important principle. This is one advantage of wearing tilak, you see. It helps us to realize the spiritual identity of the self. If one is too much enamored by one's spouse, that's sex desire, but sex desire. One should learn how to become enamored by Krishna. Actually, how to understand this? The body itself is not really attractive. And a male may be attracted to a female, but actually, the real attraction is the spirit soul. Prabhupada gives the example of, let's say, some beautiful woman. Just like in America, the old sex symbol was Marilyn Monroe back in the 50s and 60s. So, but who would be attracted to the dead body of Marilyn Monroe? The actual attractive principle is the spirit soul, not the body, you see. the spirit soul. And why is the spirit soul attracting? Because it's part of Krishna. So actually, Prabhupada, we're actually attracted to Krishna. We're actually attracted to Krishna. But through, you know, illusion, we take the body to be the attracted. But actually, our real attraction is to Krishna. So understanding this point, that actually Krishna is the only principle, the only real principle of attraction that exists anywhere in all of existence is Krishna. So understanding this, why should we be splaying out our consciousness by thinking this is attractive or that is attractive or this is attractive or that is attractive? We should focus our consciousness on Krishna, because that's where the true attraction actually exists. So this is why it's important to, in the home there should be an altar, and that should be the center of attraction. Not the body of one's spouse, but the altar is the center of attraction. A beautiful, very nicely decorated altar. Even, you can have simple photographs. We don't recommend to get, unless you're initiated and you're ready to do, you know, 3 artis every day for the rest of your life, and dress and bathe the deities every morning, bathe and dress them every evening, dress them and put them in their night clothes. Unless you're willing or able to do that, and it's practical, it's better just to have photographs or Garnatai deities. To get Jagannath or Radha Krishna is not recommended unless your spiritual master has authorized it. Not recommended, because beyond Garnatai, the other deity worships have rules and regulations. The Garnatai are very, very tolerant. So the best thing, but there should be a beautiful altar. There should be a very beautiful altar with nicely decorated with flowers. Beautiful, very nicely. Everything really beautiful and attractive. In every home there should be a beautiful altar. And that becomes the object of attraction for the kids, for the parents, for everyone. That altar, make it very beautiful. It's like here is a very beautiful altar. It's simple. It's just a photograph. But it's beautiful. See how beautiful it is? Isn't it nice? There's no deity worship. They don't have to worry about, you know, offending the deities by neglecting them if they want to go out of town or something. It's beautiful. It's a nice altar. Just photographs only. It's very nice. In the early days of ISKCON, this is all the ISKCON centers. The full-on ISKCON centers just had photographs. I know in our Austin temple, we had a little black and white picture of the Panchatattva cut out from Bhakti Godhead magazine, and that was our altar. It was that big. That was our altar. And we were making devotees like anything with a little tiny picture of Panchatattva. But we had a wonderful, artis and Vishnujana Swami was there. He was our leader, and he was singing so beautifully. And we had very nice arti. Just for the little black and white photo of the Panchatattva, you see. So it can be a very simple altar, but make it with love. Fresh flowers, incense, make it beautiful. Like, this is very beautiful what they've done here, you see. Nice curtain, nice lighting. Make it a very, very attractive thing. That should be the attractive center of your home. Not in some closet somewhere. You see? Hidden away underneath the clothes or something like that. No, put it in the prominent place. Instead of the TV, you see? The one-eyed bogus guru. You have the beautiful altar, and that's the center, not the television set, you see? Actually, we went to one home and the kid was completely dedicated to completely addicted to cartoons. I sat down on the couch in the living room and the kid went through a temper tantrum. Can you imagine? You know why? That was his place for watching the cartoons from. And I sat there, he threw a temper tantrum. The little child went crazy. So please, you know, do your kids a favor. You don't need a television set. You really don't need a TV set. You need a nice, beautiful altar. And the kid, instead of watching TV, they can sing bhajans. The child can play the drum and sing some bhajans. Chant Hare Krishna, sing some bhajans instead of watching television. You see, you have to do these tapa, and not can't be like a regular karmi and expect to go back to Godhead and just go to the temple once a week, and the rest of the time just be a regular karmi. You can't do it. It doesn't work that way. You have to cultivate Krishna consciousness at every minute and engage your family in Krishna consciousness at every minute, as much as possible. There's so many hours spent, you know, in the commute, in the job. When you come home, it should be Krishna bhakti. Okay, so we have some questions now. We're going, what's our cutoff time? 4:30? 4:30? What's our cutoff time? Huh? Okay. Okay, so now some questions. Do you need to read Bhagavad Gita? Yes. One does. We do need to read Bhagavad Gita as much as possible. That's a fact. We know the Pandavas were associates of Krishna. Is Duryodhana an associate of Lord Krishna? Actually, all of these, even all of the people who were killed during that battle, they all attained the spiritual world in their original form. So they, actually he is now an associate of Krishna. How one progresses from faith to love of God. If the love of Godhead is not complete, still do we reach Krishna's abode? Okay, there's a number of questions. The progress from faith to love of God is given by Rupa Goswami. The first thing is Shraddha. You have to have faith. This is called preliminary faith. That's the first step. The second step is called Sadhu Sangha, associating with devotees. The third step is called Bhajana Kriya. This is when you take up seriously the practices of bhakti. You rise early in the morning, you chant the Japa Mala, you wear tilak, kanti mala, you take anish diksha, and you take up all the activities of bhakti. That's called Bhajana Kriya. And then when you do that, then now you're doing the cleansing of your heart. You're gradually cleaning away the dirt in your heart, little by little. This is called the Anartha Nivritti stage. When you achieve the perfection of Anartha Nivritti, that's called Nishta. Now you're really fixed in Krishna consciousness. So that's frankly speaking, a lifetime project to get through Anartha Nivritti. It means all the lust, the anger, the greed, the madness, the illusion, the envy, cleansed out, you see. That's a lifetime project to achieve Anartha Nivritti. And then at that point, if you actually reach Anartha Nivritti, you'll be solidly fixed up, firm faith. And then from there, you go to the stage called Ruchi, in which the holy name is so sweet that you could go on chanting Hare Krishna, if your body allowed you, you could go on chanting for millions of years nonstop, relishing ever-increasing happiness in the holy name. That's the Ruchi stage. And then you become completely addicted to Krishna. Totally addicted to Krishna. That's called the it's Ruchi and then Asakti. Yeah, Asakti stage. You become completely attached to Krishna. At that stage you actually realize what is your identity in Krishna's pastimes. Your Svarupa is revealed to you in the Asakti stage. And then you actually begin to reciprocate with Krishna according to your eternal svarupa, those emotions that you have in your svarupa. You have those exchanges with Krishna at the bhava stage, and through that, you actually become perfect. You come to the prema stage. This is a very high level. We're battling. Our level is you're either Anartha Nivritti or you're before them. When you get initiated, now it's Anartha Nivritti. Working to clean out the dirt. Sometimes you will imagine that they're on the bhava stage, and they know they're rasa now, they want to perfect it. But don't be misled. There was one brahmachari years ago in the Mayapur, that long building in Mayapur. he was, the Bodhi saw him imitating a peacock. He going around in his room and said, Prabhu, what are you doing? He said, I'm practicing my rasa. He had met some Babaji who told him he was a peacock in Krishna's pastimes. So he was trying to practice his rasa. No, don't, this is sahaja. Don't think, oh yes, I know I'm a gopi. So when Brahmachari dressed up like a gopi, and it, you know, I'm a gopi, so I'm going to dress up like a gopi now and get ready. No, don't try to jump ahead to some high level. Just understand, we're at the Anartanavit. If you're initiated, you're at the Anartanavitti stage now. Working. Actually, you're beginning Anartanavitti stage. Working to get rid of the dirt in your heart. And even someone who's achieved perfection, externally he will show himself as a sadhaka, one who is just trying to develop himself in Krishna consciousness. Even the perfected souls will show that example to benefit everyone else. It's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says, Kabe have bolo se dinamar. When, oh, when will that day be mine? Aparadha guchi shudaname ruchi kripa bole have hridoye sanchar. When my offenses ceasing, taste for the name increasing, when in my heart will your mercy shine? Kave have bolo se dinamar. When, oh, when will that day be mine? He's presenting himself as someone who is struggling with his anarthas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is presenting himself as someone who is struggling with his anarthas. You see? So try to understand. That's our position. Right now we are struggling with our anarthas. Don't imagine that you've already realized your identity in Krishna's pastimes and everything you're doing is divine leela. Okay? So it's important to understand these different steps and to humbly understand what is our position right now. If love of God is not complete, still we reach Krishna's above. Actually, if your love of God is not complete, you take birth again in the material world to perfect it in your next life. The Prabhupada states that in his books. Now, if you're sincerely trying your best, Krishna can see that and throw some bonus points in at the last minute and do that. It's possible, but don't count on that. You see? Because it's stated right there in Prabhupada's books, unless you're completely pure, you don't go back to Godhead. Therefore, we must strive for complete purity. Krishna can make a concession if you're really sincere, but you got a little bit of contamination left, but you're really, really sincere, trying to get free of the contamination. Krishna can help you at the last minute. It's like when I took a Sanskrit course one time, and it was so tough. Sanskrit's a really tough language for me. The transition from English to Sanskrit is it's a big gap. Hindi to Sanskrit isn't as big of a jump, but English to Sanskrit is a huge jump. So the teacher was kind on me at the final and helped me out. I made a B in the course because the teacher was kind during the final exam, gave me some bonus questions to help me get a better grade on the final. So if a mundane Sanskrit professor can do that, then what Krishna can do, you see. If you're really sincere, he can help you. But don't be slack and count it. Well, Krishna, I can be, 70% pure and go by. No. You strive for 100% purity. Is there any measure Krishna takes to take all the conditioned souls back to his abode? Yes, that measure of the Krishna consciousness movement. Our mission is to take that everyone will go back to Godhead. That's our mission is to try to save the whole world. Prabhupada told us in Los Angeles in 1973, he said, just become guru, become perfect in your understanding of this science, become guru and deliver the whole world. That was Prabhupada's order. Prabhupada got the order to deliver to spread to the English-speaking world this message. He gave us, disciples, the order to deliver the whole world. So this movement is a measure for delivering every single divinity back to Godhead. Are we going to do that? Well, That remains to be seen, but we're going to try. We're going to try to save the whole world. That is our mission. We may only save 0.0001%, but we're going to try for 100%. That's our endeavor, you see. Prabhupada said that a Krishna conscious being is always thinking how to deliver all of the suffering humanity back to home, back to Godhead. Now, what is the name of our society? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Now, does that mean the members are supposed to be Krishna conscious beings or not? Are you supposed to be a Krishna conscious being as a member of ISKCON? Of course. This is the Society for Krishna Consciousness, so the members of the Society for Krishna Consciousness are supposed to be Krishna conscious beings. And a Krishna, someone who is actually a Krishna conscious being, is always thinking, how can I live my life in such a way by preaching and setting an example that this whole world can be delivered? That's what it really means to be an ISKCONer, an ISKCONite. A true ISKCONite is thinking, how can I deliver the whole world? How can I live in such a way that by my life, this whole world will be influenced to take up Krishna consciousness? And then Prabhupada explains, this is in a purport in the Bhagavatam, by the way, where the Prabhupada says this. And then Prabhupada says, and even though he may not succeed in doing that, his success is guaranteed, and anyone who follows him will become liberated. So there you go. If you're a true ISKCONer, a true ISKCONite, your mission is to save the world, and you'll try your damn best to do that your whole life. And you may save one or two, you may save 2 or 3 thousand. You could even save 2 or 3 million, depending on, you know, how things work out. But you strive to save as many people as you possibly can, understanding my duty is to see that the whole world becomes Krishna conscious. So that is the measure that Krishna has taken for delivering everyone. It is called the Krishna Consciousness Movement, which is now potently manifested in the form of ISKCON. We got many questions here, so but they're so important. I don't want to just, you know, rush through them. I really want to qualitatively answer them. We know that we should chant and finish 16 rounds in the morning, but we are still not doing it. Why? How can you make it possible? Get up a little earlier. It's, that's why I get up at 2:30.
Where there is a will, there,
huh?
Where there is a will, it can happen.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Do you want to get your rounds done early in the morning? That's the first thing. Do you want to do that? You see, if you desire it, Krishna, if you sincerely desire it, Krishna facilitate it. Why did God create Kali Yuga? Actually, God did not really create it. It's us who are making the Kali Yuga. Because what happens is, the material, as soon as you become materially contaminated, you become a little bit more materially contaminated, a little bit more. That's how the ages happen. You see, in the beginning, there's just a slight tinge of material consciousness in the Satya Yuga. But every day, what is that verse? Jayato vishayan pung sangate shupajayate. Sangat sanjayate kama, kamat krodo bijayate. Krodad bhavati sang moha, sang mohat smriti vibhrama. Smriti bangshad buddhi nasho, buddhi nashat pranashyate. You know that verse? Krishna says, by contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. From such attachment, lust develops. From lust, anger arises. From anger, delusion. From delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, bloop, one falls down into the material pool. So, as soon as you contact the material energy, the tendency is to become a little bit more polluted, a little bit more polluted, a little bit more polluted. And that's how the ages happen, you see. It's a natural, the living entity who wants to enjoy the material world. Just like a mundane example. Somebody drinking liquor, and they think, well, let me try some marijuana, and they think, well, let me try a little cocaine, now a little heroin. That just, as soon as you get into, you know, artificial highs, you start off with a mild intoxicant, and then you go to a heavier toxin, and pretty soon you're a heroin addict, you see. You take a little bit, and that doesn't satisfy you. You got a little bit more. That doesn't. So this way, you see, The material nature, once you give into the material nature, it grows on you naturally. So that's how the ages happen. As the people become a little bit more polluted, that's how the ages come. So we're actually causing these ages to come by our own, by our becoming more and more addicted to the material nature. It's not that Krishna says, okay, now I'm going to make the Kali Yuga happen. Now we're making the Kali Yuga happen by our increasing absorption in the material energy. Isn't each and every individual's actions and thoughts created by God? No. We are the architects of our own destiny. It's our choice whether we're going to serve God or whether we're going to try to be God. You see. Now, if you want to be God, then you will be. Then the material nature will take control of you, and you will be under the control of Krishna's external energy. You'll be like a puppet. But that was your choice. So you're responsible for all the things you do when you're acting under the influence of the material nature. What's an example? Somebody joins ISIS or Al-Qaeda, you see. And they do so many atrocities, and they're finally captured and they're put on trial. And they say, well, I had no choice. They told me I have to blow up, I had to kill 150 people. I had to do it, otherwise they'd kill me. But it was your choice to join that terrorist organization. Therefore, you are responsible for murdering those 150 people. And then be ordered to do it by your supervisor. You see. So, whatever you do when you're under the influence of the material nature, you are responsible because you chose not to serve God. So you're responsible for everything you do. So don't think that, it's God's fault, no, that I did this or I did that. What is love? Love, true love is love of God. That's true love. According to our own good and bad karmas, we either go to the upper planetary systems or lower ones, where we either enjoy the results of our past activities or suffer reactions. If it means that when we are suffering, when our sufferings or enjoyment credits are all complete, we are then sent to the earthly planets. Why then we suffer in our next life when the punishment and enjoyment is already given in the upper lower planets? We're still... until you actually surrender to Krishna completely, you're still getting reactions from previous impious and pious activities. How to raise kids in Krishna consciousness? You be Krishna conscious. I remember when Halsra couple, they came up to me with their child and they said, bow down to the Maharaj. Told the kid to bow down. The parents were standing there. They told the kid to bow down, okay? They're thinking, we're going to teach our kid how to be Krishna conscious. Have him bow down to the Maharaj. But that's wrong. You bow down and have the kids bow down with you. That's how you'll train them. You have to show by your example. You just say, you kid, oh, kid, you have to do this. No, they have to. The parents should do it and let the kids follow the adult's example. That's how you'll raise them in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, you may make them artificially Krishna conscious for some time, but as soon as they grow up, forget it. They won't be Krishna conscious. You have to be a living example. The mother and father must be acharyas. And then the children will become lifetime devotees. Otherwise, you just force them, forget it, it won't work. How to convince kids their deities are the real Krishna Balaram? How do you treat the deities? You can't just say something. You have to... Actions speak louder than words. It's a very wise saying. Why do we do Ekadasi? Because it's a very holy day. It's so holy that sin personified has nowhere to exist, but was given a special concession that on Ekadasi you can take shelter in grains. So that's why we don't eat grains on Ekadasi. It's a special residence for sin. That after the Ekadasi is over, then sin leaves the grains. When I hear Bhagavad Gita philosophy, it all makes sense, but somehow I'm not getting the push or self-motivation to begin practicing and participate in the process. What should I do? As I'm already associating, you need a guru. That's what you need. You need a guru who's going to force you and push you to become a pure devotee. You need a spiritual master. That's what you need. Okay. How can we know that we started bhakti in this very life? Are we continuing from the last birth? What does it matter? I got to figure out whether this is my first lifetime of bhakti or I did it previously. What does it matter? Just do it. And when you become fully Krishna conscious, then you'll know. Actually, Prabhupada told many, he told us that we were sent, that one time he told some of the devotees, you were Indian Brahmins in your last life and now we are together again. It's an interesting quote from Prabhupada. I know the first time I went to India in 1980, it was a very emotional experience for me. I really felt I'd been an Indian in my previous birth. So it really seems to me that I was previously doing this in my previous lifetime. I just got into Krishna consciousness. Is it possible to get liberation in this birth only? Yes. If you take it full on, you know, take up the process, chant 16 rounds, follow the principles, get initiated, serve your spiritual master's orders with love and devotion. Guarantee. You give one life fully in the service of Guru and Krishna, I guarantee you, you will go back to God in this lifetime. Why is it important to wear Kunti Mala and put Tilak? Well, this reminds us who we actually are. This is very good for our Krishna consciousness. Can we chant without? Yes, you can chant without them. You certainly can. But why would you not want to wear Kunti Mala and Tilak? You see? Because that's part of our rules and regulations to wear Tilak and Kunti Mala. So you say, well, I don't want to follow the rules and regulations, I'm just going to chant. Well, your chanting will mean impure if you don't want to follow the rules and regulations. If Krishna is fully satisfied and supreme enjoyer, why does some say that we do bhakti for Krishna's pleasure? In other words, he's already the supreme enjoyer. Why does he need to be pleased by us? One could ask, you see.
It is our duty. You are taking so much things from him. So why don't we reciprocate with him? It's not that he needs it, but it's our duty to reciprocate with him.
Yeah, that's true. Another point is this. Actually, Krishna is feeling unhappy that his beloved children are caught up in the wheel of birth and death. It's painful for him. So why are you torturing Krishna by not going back to his abode? Why are you maintaining your independence here in the cycle of birth and death? It's painful to Krishna. If your kid ran away from home, would you be happy? Actually, Krishna feels separate. He feels pain that we're away from him. So don't torture Krishna by keeping yourself away any longer. Go back to Krishna. He's waiting for you. Even though he's a supreme enjoyer, he's feeling that anguish for the separation of his beloved children. How many rounds of chanting beads under 10 years should do? As many as possible. As soon as they're old enough to respect the beads, you see. If they don't understand how to always respect the beads, they leave them on the floor. You know, they're not ready for japa. But as soon as they're old enough to understand the sanctity of the beads, they can start chanting japa. Right? The kids agreed. Okay, how did Krishna leave his body? Krishna did not leave his body. Krishna, Krishna went in his body back to Godhead. What he left behind was a show only. It was actually the universal form was left behind. But his original body, he was shot. At the time of his departure, he was shot in the foot with an arrow. But that arrow never pierced his skin. It just bounced off his foot. That arrow did not, Krishna wasn't killed by that hunter. The first of all, who's killed by an arrow in the foot? First of all. And the second point, it didn't even pierce his skin, okay? So he just took, this is his cue. I think this is my time to get out of the material world, you see? It was his cue, now is my time. Krishna was not killed by that arrow. Krishna did not leave his body. He went back, and the demigods could see, someone could see him, how he's ascending back to the spiritual world. Okay. How many rounds should I chant if I am eight? As many as you can. Huh?
He has eight.
You should chant eight? Talk about the importance of a codicil. I already mentioned that. Okay, I keep getting distracted while doing chanting. What should I do? Chant early in the morning before sunrise. That's when those who are in the know, they chant before sunrise, you see. Because that's when no one's going to bother you. Everybody's asleep. You see, the phone's not going to ring. No one's going to knock on the door. Chant in the early morning before sunrise. That's the golden time for japa. It's called Brahma Muhurta Hour. Use those golden moments of the day for deep meditation on Krishna. And your day will be so sweet. You'll just be oozing with nectar. You did go deep into the name early in the morning. Even when you get to work, you'll be in bliss. I look at you and they go, wow, look at that. Look at Joe over there. He looks so happy. I wonder what he did last night. They won't understand this transcendental happiness, but they'll know that person really looks happy. I keep getting this. Oh, yeah. Okay. If the attraction is toward the soul, then why we get attracted towards some bodies and not all? Well, it's the modes of nature. The influence of the modes of nature. What is Krishna's Ahaituki mercy? It means causeless mercy. Causeless mercy means that you don't deserve it. That Krishna gives you his kindness that even though you don't deserve it, especially in the form of Lord Chaitanya. He didn't make any condition. He just distributed his mercy everywhere, to everyone. How to get it? You got to be in the right place at the right time. You want to get that special mercy. So, go to your nearest ISKCON center where the mercy is flowing. You see? Or pick up a book of Prabhupada, you see, or chant Hare Krishna, and then you will get the mercy. Do we have to be a Jnana Bhakti, or a Prema Bhakti, Bhakta? Jnana is very favorable for developing Prema. To know the science, to be a Jnana or learned, is very helpful. To actually know what is the scientific process by which I can awaken love of God. So we recommend that you get jnana by reading these books, by attending these lectures, so you understand what is the science of self-realization, what is the science of awakening love of God, how does it work, how can I do it? That knowledge is very, very important. This knowledge is described by Krishna, Raja Vidya Raja Goyam Pavitram Idamuttamam Prachakshavagamam Dharmyam Shushukam Kottamav Yayam. This knowledge is the king of education. It's the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion, and it is joyfully performed. So, this knowledge will help you, you see. That's why we encourage you not to sleep in these classes. We have some people sleeping today, but, you know, if that didn't wake them up, better let them sleep. But this knowledge is very important. This knowledge is very, very important because this knowledge will enable you to live your life in such a way that this is your last birth in the material world. This is very important instructions. Just like you're on the Titanic, right? And it's sinking. And there's some announcement that where to find the lifeboat. How important is that knowledge? Where to find the lifeboat? Your life depends on it. So therefore, this knowledge is like that. Your life depends on this knowledge, understanding this knowledge, so you can know how to practice this science of bhakti and achieve perfection. If you don't have this knowledge, you don't know what you're doing, chances are you're going to be, you know, you're taking an animal birth in your next life. Because you didn't use your human form for its purpose to awaken love of God. I am struggling managing time for taking care of home, family, and temple services. Taking time out to study is difficult. How can I do justice to all these services? I am not sure which to prioritize. Well, do you listen to lectures while you're driving? Do you put in your CD player in your car? Do you have lecture CDs you listen to when you're driving? Are you maximizing every minute? I remember seeing my beloved godbrother Tamal Krishna Goswami going to the shower in the morning, the bathroom. He took a cassette player, and those we didn't have MP3s, it was cassette in those days. He would hear a lecture of Prabhupada while he's shaving and brushing his teeth. How much are you utilizing every spare minute, every minute of your 24 hours to hear about Krishna? How well are you utilizing it? You have to be expert time manager. There's so many time management seminars being taught nowadays. You know who the original guru of time management is? Srila Rupa Goswami. He said, do not waste a single moment. Don't waste even a single moment. Every second of your 24 hours is the most precious gift. And once it's gone, it's gone. You can never get it back. So utilize every spare minute to cultivate Krishna consciousness. You have been in Krishna consciousness since 1970. Actually, 71 is when I got initiated, although I began cultivating Krishna consciousness a little bit in 1968. I started chanting in 68, but I didn't really take it seriously until 71. Have you seen, observed any differences in human society then and now? Oh, yes. Society has gone down like anything. I mean, it's just becoming so polluted. There was a bumper sticker that actually tells it well. A bumper sticker I saw one time. It said, do you remember when the air was, when sex was dirty and the air was clean? It used to be, you know, but then the whole sexual revolution came in. So now sex... Sex, sex, sex. I remember the sex you want to have is fine. Any kind of sex is cool. You know, and the air is as polluted like anything. But it's an interesting bumper sticker. When I went to high school, if you got a girl pregnant, you'd marry her. You'd be a decent guy and you'd marry her. That was the rule. That was the society back in the 60s, early 60s when I was a high school student. If you got a girl pregnant, you'd marry her. That's it. Finished. You marry her. That was it. All over. Got her pregnant. You marry her. Finished. And we would pray every day. The whole school would pray. There was prayer all over the whole United States. Every morning, every kid would say a prayer. And every school, the public schools, every kid would pray. But some rascal from Austin, Texas, where I'm preaching in now, named Madeline O'Hare, She was an atheist, and she did not want her kid to have to hear a prayer. So the Supreme Court of the United States to facilitate this one woman's kid not hearing the prayer banned prayer at every school in the United States of America, every public school. So one little kid didn't have to hear the prayer. Millions of children cannot pray. Why don't they just take that one little kid and put him in a separate room during the prayer? I mean, this is intelligence, but the Supreme Court judges, one guy with them said, they're a bunch of cartoon characters. They don't have brains. So one little kid didn't have to hear the prayer. They banned millions of children from praying every morning when they began their school day. And what came after that? After they banned prayer? Guns, illicit sex, and drugs. And now the kids take guns to schools. They shoot the teachers. They have to have metal detectors in the schools. I mean, you've seen the news stories. Columbine High School in Colorado. How many? 20, 30 people were killed. It's crazy what's going on in these schools now. In one school in Texas, in one city in Texas, the teachers now are being authorized to carry guns to school. The teachers are having guns in the classroom. Just in case one kid pulls out a gun and starts shooting, the teacher can shoot the kid. And this, I think, is advancement of civilization. They think they're advancing more and more into nations. This is what I've seen. It's becoming crazier and crazier and crazier because we've kicked out God. God, I don't care if you say Krishna or Allah or Jehovah, the principle of God must be the center of the society once again. We have to put God back in the center. They used to put God in the center. Look at the American Constitution. The founding fathers of the United States of America talked about God in their founding documents, okay? That America was very strong because even on the dollar today, in God we trust on the U.S. dollar, and it's a very powerful country in the world, and they say, in God we trust, you see. The European Union, look in their founding documents, see if there's any mention of God in there. You'll find absolutely zero mention of God in the founding documents of the European Union. That shows you where we're heading and why the whole society is collapsing all over the world and why it's becoming more and more chaotic. You see, more and more chaotic. These crazy shootings that people do every few days, somebody goes crazy, it didn't used to happen. When I was a kid, this didn't happen. People would go crazy with a gun and start shooting. It was unheard of. But now it's a common thing in the news. How many mass shootings have taken place in 2014 around the world? Somebody takes a gun in work or at a public or a shopping mall and starts shooting people dead. It's happening every few days. It's happening now. You see, this is where society is heading because they've taken God out of the center. People are frustrated. They don't know how to be happy, and they just take out their frustrations. They shoot people and they shoot themselves. It's crazy. Just like now in Pakistan, they went into some school, they killed 150 children, were shot dead by the Taliban. 150 children were brutally murdered in a school. And this is right now, just in the last week. It's all due to a lack of God consciousness. We're not putting God in the center. That's the problem. Is there any difference in sincerity of devotees that you made in the 70s? The devotees are wonderful. I see that within our movement, the standard of Krishna consciousness is getting higher and higher and higher in this country. That's a good thing. Within our society, standard is going up. We were the devotees were very enthusiastic and fired up in the old days, but they weren't so mature. I mean, there was a lot of wild... I remember, it was fanatical, pretty fanatical sometimes in the old days. I remember at breakfast, you're only allowed 7 chickpeas. And someone said, if Prabhupada said if you have more than 7 chickpeas, you fall down to lust. So it was, you're only allowed 7 chickpeas on your plate, and that's it. Well, I'm hungry. No, Prabhupada said only 7 chickpeas. It was, things have matured in ISKCON. They've definitely matured. So I see that ISKCON are improving. I see the standard of, and then I see devotees who stuck to this process decade after decade. They're becoming more and more mature. And sweet, it's just And ISKCON things are definitely, in many ways, becoming one of... Of course, on the other hand, we're taking on so many members now all over the world. There's a lot of, what I could say, loose consciousness also in our society. Because we've taken on so many, we're attracting so many people, and they're not always being trained to the highest standard, because maybe there's no even... Because it's growing so fast, you know, in many ways, it's growing so fast, and the training is not... See, in the old days, we were getting 7 classes a day, all right? Everyone lived in the ashram. We got 7 classes a day when I joined the movement. 7 classes every day. And then when you're not in class, you're out preaching, telling people about Krishna on the street or on the college campus. So now we have most, we're practically all congregation-based, and they may get 1 class a week. And maybe then they're distracted taking care of their kid or this or that. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do now. We have so many new people coming in, getting attracted. We have a lot of work to do to properly train our members to the proper standard. So the different things instituted, like Bhakti Shastri, these are very good things to give to force more and more, you know, to see that everybody's getting some level, basic level of training. These seminars, like today, is a very good opportunity. So how much time do we have left, Balaram? 5 minutes? We're already over time. I only have 2 more questions left. So I'll go ahead and finish these. Okay. Is Krishna hearing when devotees are chanting? Krishna actually is omniscient. He's fully cognizant of everything. So he's hearing the quality of your rounds or the quality of your kirtan. When devotees are chanting, how does Lord Krishna judge that this devotee is in pain and distress? Krishna knows everything about you more than you even know about yourself. He knows absolutely everything about you. And how to solve this problem first is Krishna's bhakta takes every time to resolve our past karmas. Krishna is doing everything possible every minute to see that you can become delivered back to God as soon as possible. But we are not cooperating. That's the problem. Krishna is doing everything possible to save each and every living entity in this material world, but we're not cooperating with them. That's why Krishna says, Sarvadharman Purit Jaja Ma Mekang Shanadang Vajra. You give up all this nonsense, so-called duties, and just take one duty only, and that is to be my cup, pure devotee. That's your only duty. Okay, 2 more, the last. Days when spiritual life goes strong, and some days there is no taste. How to overcome these fluctuations become fixed? These, whether the taste is there, whether the holy name is sweet or the holy name is bitter, keep chanting. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by doing that, chanting steadily and not when it feels, when it's sweet, I'll chant. When it's bitter, I'm not going to chant. No. You chant when it's bitter and you chant when it's sweet. And by doing that, gradually, all the bitterness will go away and it'll be the most unbelievably sweet experience you can ever have in millions and billions of lifetimes, even if you were a demigod in the heavenly planets. You can exceed the pleasure of the demigods in the heavenly planets just by meditating on the holy name. How to best serve Guru and Vaishnavas? Totally give your life to pleasing your spiritual master with your every thought, word, and deed, and always take the Vaishnavas as your life and soul. Lord Nityananda says that anybody who is a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, that person is my life and soul. So you should, if Lord Nityananda is taking every Chaitanyaite as his life and soul, what you should feel about the devotees, you should take every single devotee as your very life and soul. So in this way, you'll become perfect very quickly in this process of Krishna consciousness, and you will not take birth again in this material world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.